Welcome to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. Today, we're checking in on a massive water infrastructure project that state officials are pursuing and environmentalists are opposing, the Lake Powell Pipeline. Earlier this month, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation released its long-awaited draft environmental impact statement, a necessary step on the road to final approval before construction can begin. A public comment period is now open where you can weigh in, and there are two online public hearings coming up in early July. We'll post links along with this show at kcbw.org. We'll begin today, though, with a quick reminder of what the Lake Powell Pipeline is. The plan is to build a big tube, 6 feet in diameter and roughly 140 miles long, that takes in water at Lake Powell, the man-made reservoir down on the Utah-Arizona border that holds Colorado River water, to pump that water west to growing communities in Washington County, namely St. George and its surroundings. State officials say that population growth in that area of the state makes the pipeline necessary.
Okay, my name is Joel Williams. I am the assistant director at the Utah Division of Water Resources. The projections that we're using come from the Kemsey-Gardner Policy Institute out of the University of Utah, which is now, they produce the official projections for the state of Utah. They're showing that by 2060, there would be over 500,000 people in Washington County. So it is one of the fastest growing areas in the entire nation. I think they're at around 180,000 people right now. So you're talking more than doubling.
The Division of Water Resources' Joel Williams says that water from the Lake Powell Pipeline is needed for residential growth, not for agricultural uses of water. I mention that because the vast majority of water use across the state is for agriculture. We'll circle back to that fact a bit later. But staying with this specific project, the Lake Powell Pipeline, for now, it is expensive. That is a certainty. But just how expensive is something that state officials like Joel Williams and environmentalists disagree on. Though, as you'll hear in just a second, some of that disagreement is the result of numbers that the state has been updating.
I'm Zach Frankel. I'm the executive director of the Utah Rivers Council, a 25-year-old nonprofit here in Salt Lake City, Utah. The 2019 legislative audit on the Lake Powell Pipeline found the project would cost $2.4 billion. And those auditors, when they looked at it, they said that rates have to go up, water rates have to go up at least 360%. A 360% increase in water rates, that's massive. That's almost a quadrupling of your monthly water bill.
By the way, the current official estimates reflected in the draft environmental impact statement from the Bureau of Reclamation released earlier this month are that the pipeline will cost $1.4 billion. Still a great deal of money, but not the $2.4 billion figure Utah Rivers Council's Zach Frankel is referencing. Here's Joel Williams again from the Utah Division of Water Resources with the latest estimates.
So the cost that we submitted to the Bureau of Reclamation and is the one that they used shows for the southern alignment the cost of approximately $1.48 billion, and for the highway alignment, $1.43 billion. I believe the exact difference between the two was $57 million.
So why the wide discrepancy on the cost of this project? Williams says the reason is because the project has fundamentally changed.
Some I know have marveled, saying, well, how come that cost range hasn't gone up dramatically since, say, our 2015 cost estimate? Why in 2020 are we still using the same cost estimate? And the reason there is really the costs have gone up, but we've also eliminated aspects of the project that have brought the cost down. And so it ends up looking like about the same range.
Part of what he's describing includes a long backstory that I won't go into in depth here. Originally, this project was slated to have a number of hydropower components as the water made its way from Lake Powell to St. George. It was originally going to also generate electricity. Now it's primarily a water pipeline. So that's apparently some part of the reason for the hundreds of millions of dollars in price difference between what state auditors said the cost could be and what the state is saying now. That and the fact that some of the original intended recipients of this water have bowed out of the project. But remember what Zach Frankel from Utah Rivers Council said about state auditors finding that the pipeline would cost.
The 2019 legislative audit on the Lake Powell Pipeline found the project would cost $2.4 billion.
Yeah, great question. As we talked with the auditors, and our understanding was they wanted to work with, they kind of wanted to look at, okay, worst case scenario. When we said 1.1 to 1.8, they said, okay, we're going with 1.8. And then they said, in addition to that, we're going to add on the inflation costs to say, okay, well, depending on when the project is actually built, you know, if we have a couple of years of design and put it out to bid, get a contractor, say it's not till 2025 or something when construction starts, that they then added on inflation.
Yeah, and so changes and inflation, and also the fact that Kane County, which was originally slated to get some of this water, pulled out of the project altogether, saying it no longer has a foreseeable need for the water. Remember those words, foreseeable need, because we'll come back to them in just a little bit. But, okay, so far you might be wondering, why does this story matter? Like, what's the point, Roger? Well, in the interest of simplifying, there are really three components of why this pipeline is contentious here. Three components where Utah government officials and environmentalists are also not on the same page. They are, first, the price of the project and the resulting rise in water rates. Second, water conservation versus population growth. And third, the overall environmental picture looming in the background that includes climate change and drought. So far, we've talked about the differences on price for the Lake Powell pipeline. Water rates will have to increase in St. George to help pay for the project. And yet again, there is a vast difference of opinion on what that means.
Draconian increases in water rates, 500%, 600%, 800% in water rate costs inside Washington County.
Again, there is some misinformation out there. We have heard claims of 500% increases. I've even heard of some say 3,000% increases. Just to be clear, they do anticipate increases, but they've been known for a while and have been well publicized of 10 cents per thousand gallons each year up to a $3 increase. And that would occur in 2045. So it's going to be a very gradual increase of 10 cents per gallon. If they were to increase 500%, they would be generating billions and billions of dollars in excess revenue. So they'll only increase them as much as they need to.
And it's remarkable how many elected officials are happy to ignore a 500% water rate increase on the residents they claim to serve. It makes one wonder during this pandemic economy why so many people are deaf and unconcerned about these economic impacts, especially on working families and other low-income populations who are really struggling to get through this pandemic. Education funding has been stripped down, as has a whole range of public services in the Utah budget. And now we're proposing this completely unnecessary boondoggle.
So if you were to look and say, okay, compare now to 2045, there will be an increase. Would it be 300%? I don't believe so. I think, and the other interesting thing there is that when I talk about that 10%, increase, that's the wholesale water rate, which Washington County Water Conservancy District would charge to cities and other water providers, not directly to a family. So that then kind of gets spread out over their entire service areas. So we're actually expecting fairly gradual increases.
So Utah Rivers Council wants to make sure we have a sustainable and affordable water supply, and that's the Lake Powell pipeline's the opposite of that.
Okay, so again, three bullet points: costs, which we've been discussing, water conservation, and the big environmental picture. Moving on to water conservation, the environmental community says that Washington County is doing almost nothing when it comes to conservation, and that the pipeline would be rendered altogether unnecessary if real water conservation measures were put in place. Actually, they say that Washington County already has all the water it needs, and quite a lot more in the Virgin River system that currently supplies it, but they also have a bone to pick, dry, about water conservation and what it can accomplish. Here again is Zach Frankel.
It makes sense, right? The water in front of you in your glass is a much cheaper source than a glass of water 140 miles away. They pretend like they've achieved a high level of water conservation, but the draft EIS is clear. Their water use is over 300 gallons per person per day. It's twice the US average. They're not even trying to save water. And that's because they have the cheapest water rates in the American West. The Washington County Water District is selling water for about $1.20 per thousand gallons. The price of water in Los Angeles is between $15 and $20 per thousand gallons. So to talk about water conservation and then to charge massive institutional users inside Washington County using 100,000 or 200,000 or 500,000 gallons a month, $1.50 per thousand gallons, it's just lip service. And unfortunately, there's lots of that in the CIS. Washington County claims it's doing a good job conserving water. It is factually inaccurate to make that claim.
There's a story out of neighboring Nevada that underscores some of what Frankel is saying here. Las Vegas, not a place you would exactly consider lush, definitely not a water-rich place. Las Vegas water managers wanted to build a pipeline from aquifers underneath the West Desert, which overlaps with the Utah border. They spent years trying to make it happen and said the need was urgent, that future growth required that they build this. But a coalition of interested parties, including environmentalists, ranchers, and even the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, fought them tooth and nail. And then, about a month ago, the Southern Nevada Water Authority, after decades trying to build this project, said that water conservation in Las Vegas had made the project unnecessary. There was no longer a foreseeable need. Steve Erickson is with the Great Basin Water Network, which was part of the unlikely coalition that opposed the Las Vegas water grab.
Yes, the board of directors of the Southern Nevada Water Authority, they basically cut bait on the entire project. And the rationale is important for the people who are listening to understand. The reason is they did conservation to such a good degree in Las Vegas and surrounding communities that the demand for more water dropped, even as the population continued to increase. So the population increases, and yet they are using less water now than they were when they applied for it in 2004.
We'll hear more from Steve Erickson of the Great Basin Water Network on an upcoming episode of this show. So could conservation do the same trick for Washington County? Utah water managers are not so optimistic. Here's Joel Williams from the Division of Water Resources.
So we are looking at what conservation they have achieved, what we anticipate them. We're looking for up to about an additional 20% of water reduction in water use in that area. And even considering that, as we look at their needs, we're showing that conservation alone would not meet the projected growth. There would just not be enough savings in water to prevent them from needing additional water.
As I said, a vast difference of opinion here. It might be worth adding the reminder, though, that the Southern Nevada Water Authority also said that the project they were pursuing to get aquifer water out from under western Utah and parts of eastern Nevada was absolutely necessary. Until, after years of concerted opposition, they said it wasn't really needed after all, because conservation in Las Vegas had done the trick. So returning to our Lake Powell pipeline bullet points, we've talked about cost, we talked about water conservation. The third and final bullet point is the big environmental picture. And there is, of course, one core issue that is lurking in the background of, well, everything right now, climate change. And for the purposes of this conversation, climate change's impact on the Colorado River system.
The draft EIS failed to consider the impacts of climate change because right now we're in what's considered a mega drought, where the American Southwest has not been this hot and dry in 500 years. And it's very clear with scores of climate studies that have been produced so far that the Colorado River does not have any water to put in the Lake Powell pipeline. It's likely that we're going to build a $3 billion empty skateboard pipe.
Again, that's Zach Frankel from the Utah Rivers Council, and here's Joel Williams from the Utah Division of Water Resources on the same point.
I think the entire West is worried about that. When we look at the Colorado River and know that, you know, the flows aren't what they once were, that the average has come down since Hoover Dam was built. The average flows in the Colorado River are going down and not increasing. And also climate change, you know, that we know the climate is warming and that we could see less snow and perhaps more rain, but that does change your mix. So it's certainly something that we are all worried about and conscious of. One thing that we want to stress is this is just part of Utah's existing allocation in the Colorado River. And many other states have already developed their full allocation. Utah has not yet. This would be approximately 6% of Utah's allocation, a small portion of it, but an important portion where we could provide water for this growing community. And along with all the Colorado River water users, let's say there are very dry years ahead, that there are shortages, we would take part in those shortages along with everyone else. And that's kind of how the water breakup works, is by percentages. And so, you know, if you say, okay, each state is getting this percentage, if suddenly you have less water, and part of that is those discussions will be happening with the drought contingency plans and looking at the future of the Colorado River, it could be that we suddenly say, okay, each state now, your percentage is this much smaller, and that we would go along, you know, we would have to take those shortages along with anyone else, but that we would still be having our share just like everyone else. I think maybe some get it in their minds of saying like, oh, well, that there's not going to be any water in the Colorado, and it's all going to go to California. And because we were last in line, suddenly Utah doesn't get any. Really, it's kind of each state has an allocation, and that is done by percentage, and the shortages would be shared. So those will all be planned. And it is a concern, obviously, but one that we have analyzed and done modeling out into the future, looking at even very dry forecasted scenarios to show that, yes, there still would be water for Utah to develop its allocation.
All right, so ultimately the river may be getting smaller, its flows diminishing because of climate change, but state water officials say we've got a lot more legally available to us than we're using, so let's use it. So what do these two apparently opposing voices see happening next in all of this? Zach Frankel wants to see this project stopped, but he doesn't sound particularly hopeful about those prospects.
You know, the Trump administration has already indicated its willingness to expedite approval of the project. They claim they want to approve it in January of 2021, if not sooner, which is very, very fast for this 140-mile-long project. So yeah, it's basically going to get an approval unless sanity steps in and residents in Washington County and Utah taxpayers speak up and say, we don't want this.
Meanwhile, the Utah Division of Water Resources' Joel Williams says that this is just the first step in a long road toward future growth, and it's a road that past water managers made possible for other parts of the state.
Any of us that live along the Wasatch Front or live in developed communities, we all depend on large infrastructure water projects that have come before us. Huge reservoirs and pipelines and canals and transmountain diversions that allow us to live where we do here along the Wasatch Front and have water to meet our needs. And many of those projects were funded by the federal government decades and decades ago. But we look now at this project in Washington County, and we know that there's not federal money available. And so for years, it's been planned to be a state project. And I think it's getting some additional scrutiny. I think I view it in the similar vein as the projects we now depend on. It's one of those large-scale water infrastructure projects. Yes, it's expensive. Yes, there are some impacts that come, but it's what provides for water and for our future, and kind of we all depend on them now. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for the projects that came before us. And now this would be a project that 50 years down the road, people would say, boy, you know, we're sure glad that we have this secure water that could provide for our needs. And so I think just as we're looking forward to this type of project, we also need to look behind us and realize all of these types of things that have gone before us to provide for our needs.
But Williams did offer one caveat, granted a sort of minuscule chance kind of caveat, but a caveat nonetheless.
I do see one area where it could affect the future of the project, and that would be in the public, you know, and in the leadership down there. We've seen it, you know, as this project years ago, there were three water conservancy districts involved. The Central Iron County Water Conservancy District was planned to be a part of this project, as well as Kane County Water Conservancy District. And both of them have determined that they will find other ways to meet their water needs. So if some of the leadership of the area down there, as well as the residents, you know, start to say, you know what, we would rather not grow as much. We would rather kind of stay the size we are. We'd rather pursue these other alternatives. Then suddenly, no, the project's not needed. That's where the change would have to come from, is what I'm saying, essentially, is the community themselves saying, yeah, we no longer see a need for this additional water. We'd rather pursue growth control measures.
One piece of this, actually one of a number of pieces of this that we didn't talk about on today's show, is that the Kaibab Band of Paiute Indians, a group whose tribal lands intersect and abut the proposed routes of the pipeline, the tribe filed paperwork explaining their concern about the project, saying that the pipeline would cause imbalances and was inappropriate. Tribal opposition was a key part of a pipeline that was effectively stopped in neighboring Nevada, but it took what Steve Erickson of the Great Basin Water Network calls an unlikely coalition to stop the Las Vegas water pipeline.
It was really grassroots folks. It was the tribes, the Goshutes in particular, but the Shoshone tribes in Nevada were also front and center. The ranching community, this oddball coalition of environmentalists from the cities and ranching community, the Cattlemen's Association. The Mormon Church was had a distinct interest in, because they own a large ranch in Spring Valley in Nevada, which would have been really hurt by this project. It's a model, I think, for how to do organizing in the West. You've got to cross those boundaries with folks who may on the face of it not have much in common, but if you have a common cause, a common denominator, it's workable.
How that happened and why it happened is something that we'll be tackling soon on this show. Stay tuned. All right, well, if you're still listening to this show, you are at least interested in this project, and maybe you care one way or another about whether it happens. If that's the case, a reminder that a public comment period is now open. We will put links to where you can weigh in today's show post at kcpw.org. You've been listening to In the Hive here on KCPW, a listener-supported, independent public radio resource. Our theme music is by Andrew Shaw. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. Please join us again next week.